listener, or participant. Move it on up. Join the conversation at 1-800-684-2848 or 883-5000.
All right, so I hope you spent a few minutes here thinking about what it might look like if when your paycheck arrives on Friday, you just turned it over to the government to administrate how you're going to use your money this week. Well, we wouldn't do that. So why would we do that when we're gone? Why would we allow the government to make our decisions for us? Tom Copeland is here to talk about it. Tom, it's great to have you back with us.
It's good to be here, Neil.
Yeah, so it doesn't make much sense, does it, that so few people actually have planned to even have a will, which is the starting point when it comes to estate planning.
Good point, Neil. It's interesting, if you look at the surveys over the last 30 years, and I've seen them, a number of them from time to time for Canada, the U.S., and almost around the world, it shows that more than 50% of people generally do not have a will. Yet we all know we're gonna die. And of course, one of the biblical financial principles in Luke 14, the parable of the tower, that where Christ admonished us to plan ahead, and we need to plan ahead in managing the money He's entrusted to us. And certainly, part of that would include the preparation of a will.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be too silly here, because obviously Jesus said, whoever lives and believes in me will never die. He was talking about spiritual life, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think the last statistic I saw about every living human being is that all 100% are eventually going to die. So, right? I mean, yep. It's going to happen.
As Paul said, we brought nothing into this world and we shall take nothing out of it.
All right, so you've had on your heart for a while to talk about this issue, and you haven't really yet. I mean, it's something that you obviously are able to talk about, and you've got the expertise to do so, but it hasn't been an emphasis for you. I think it's wise that we spend some time here, but yeah, this is a passion of yours.
I agree.
Yeah, all right.
I agree, because it's an area, estate planning, and especially biblically based estate planning, is an area that most Christians really don't address. They don't think about it. They just assume that they just don't address it, that's all.
And just give us a little bit of your background again. People need to understand that we're not... While you're a businessman, there is probably almost no one in our listening audience who would ever take advantage of what you have to offer, because as an accountant, certified public accountant in Canada, you work with major corporations, right?
That's correct. Our focus is owner-managed private corporations. We only do personal returns for the owners. We don't do personal returns for anyone else. So of interest, 99% of the people that I minister to will never be clients of my accounting practice. That just provides the needs to pay my bill and also help fund the ministries.
Okay, which is and I want to just stop for a minute so people understand. So catch what he's saying. There's nothing to be gained financially from Tom's conversation here. He's here to help us understand what biblically based estate planning is all about. And so this is going to be a benefit to all of us, both sides of the border who are listening. And, you know, Tom obviously is heard several times a day here on WDCX, but that's at his own expense, merely as a ministry to our listening audience. Can you imagine? So, Tom, thank you for that. Thanks even for making Lifeline possible. You're one of our sponsors. So, all right. Well, biblically based estate planning obviously implies that the Bible has some things to say about estate planning and financial principles. Which of them apply to this subject? Let's just touch on that briefly before we dig in.
Good question. There's lots that do apply. I mean, first of all, Proverbs 21:5 says, the plans of the diligent lead to advantage, as surely as haste leads to poverty. The idea throughout Scripture is that we need to plan ahead, and part of that planning should be planning for the distribution of our estate after we go, which unfortunately so many people neglect. And just also in the process of planning, what should you do? Should you consider giving a portion to the Lord's work? How should you allocate it amongst your beneficiaries? There's a lot of biblical principles that apply to estate planning that many people are not aware of, and we'll discuss some of those today.
You mentioned earlier, and I've said it now a couple times myself, that only about 50% of people in North America, that's Americans and Canadians, all of us, actually have a will. And I'm just wondering, from your experience, do you have any reason why? I mean, what's the point of that? Do you think people are afraid to even consider the fact that they may die someday? Is that part of, is there a fear factor, or is it just overlooked because there's more pressing things that seem to be of concern at the moment?
I think it's overlooked. I think it's just deferred. People just, most of the time, they just think, well, we don't have to worry about that. Maybe the husband and wife are in their 30s or 40s or 50s, And the assumption is you're going to always live to your 80s, and it doesn't always work that way. I think it's often overlooked, and there can be a fear factor, and there can also be a struggle of what should we do, and they're not sure what to do. But I think often people just overlook it. It's on the back burner. It's not a high priority, so sometimes those things never get addressed.
All right, and it's a bit stark and maybe even startling to say that, you know, the government's going to show up at your door and tell you what happens to your money after you're gone, but in a sense, there is some truth to that.
Yes, there is. There's interesting, if someone dies without a will in Canada or the United States, the government rules and regulations apply, and often those rules and regulations can cause your assets to be allocated in a way that that you would never have done. For example, in Ontario, and I'm not a lawyer, I don't profess to give legal advice, but I've certainly talked to lots of lawyers. In Ontario, if a husband died and he had no will, everybody would assume that all the assets just automatically go to his wife. They don't. Under Ontario law, the first $200,000 goes to the wife, and then the excess over $200,000, one-third goes to the wife, and the other two-thirds gets allocated equally amongst the children. So, I'm not sure what happens in the United States, but one thing we know is we don't want the government to be making decisions on how to allocate your assets after you die. You can solve that simply by doing a proper will.
Yeah, and not to sound heavy-handed here or anything, but we all kind of readily accept the term stewardship for those of us who have breath in our lungs, but we don't often think about the reality that stewardship implies, preparing and planning for the future, including when we are not here physically. So you can imagine, I mean, human nature being what it is, if there is any disagreement and misunderstanding, if you know, intentions about what happens to money and assets and those kinds of things after someone's gone, if those questions begin to arise, it's possible, and maybe even in some cases likely, that there's going to be disputes and the kids are going to get involved in, who knows, lawsuits, and it can get really ugly pretty fast.
Absolutely, Neil. And over the last 35 years, I've seen lots of situations where people have died without a will, or if the will's unclear, and there's disputes between the siblings, and sometimes there's even lawsuits. I've seen cases where they run up tens of thousands of dollars worth of legal bills just fighting over the estate, and so it's really unfortunate that happens, but it does, and just preparing a proper will, and if there's anything out of the ordinary in it, I also talk to people they should communicate to their heirs to reduce the risk of disputes.
All right, if only one in every two persons in North America has a will, how many do you think of those who do have a will, how many have decided to include anything for God's work after they're gone?
Interesting. Advisors with Purpose, which is a group of Christian financial advisors here in Canada, and they have their a corresponding group in the United States. They've done I think they're called Kingdom Advisors down there. They've done a survey, and they've determined that, generally speaking, out of let's say every 100 Christians, about 50 have prepared wills. But out of that 50, only 15%, only a small percentage, has actually included the Lord's work in their will. 85% have not. Yet, interesting, when they spoke to some people, and I've done this as well, most Christians, when you talk to them about including the Lord's work in their will, God's work as one of their, you know, their church and whatever, some parachurch organization as one of their beneficiaries, almost all say they would do it if they knew they could do it, and if they knew they should do it. Like, they just didn't think about it. Often what happens is the husband says to the wife, honey, we got to go do a will, so they just rush out to a lawyer. They haven't given in any thought and prayer, and they simply have the will prepared based upon the lawyer's standard will, which is usually husband dies, everything goes to the wife, wife dies, everything goes to the husband, and once they're both gone, it gets split equally amongst their kids, and nothing goes to the Lord's work. That's often what happens when people do a will. They just don't think about it.
Our listeners wouldn't be aware that I've had a couple of conversations with you just in advance of this conversation on air. And, you know, I've been reading through some of the documents you sent me and stuff just in preparation to talk about this issue. But somewhere along the line, I think it was our first conversation on the phone, you mentioned something about somebody passing away who was very wealthy. Like, let's say, you know, died with $30 million or something, whatever the number was.
Yep.
And that they chose to give, like, let's say, $27 million to charitable organizations and their church and other stuff, and like $3 million to their kids, because they felt like money can cause more problems than it solves. And that was you didn't say it that way, but I think you know where I'm going with that. It was a really interesting comment. Can you kind of take us back there and maybe describe where you were going with that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of scriptures that talk, I think of Proverbs 16:16, where it talks about get wisdom, it's worth more than money, choose insight over income every time. And I've seen it in my practice because I do tax planning for some very successful entrepreneurs. And often they have large estates. And I've seen cases when the business or these big assets get transferred from one generation to the next, and the next generation hasn't had to work for it, where often it gets squandered. The money gets spent, and also it can almost affect their mindset, their attitude, an attitude of what they should, you know, that they're entitled to certain things. And mm-hmm. I've seen cases where a couple of sons, they inherited a business, they sold it in their late 30s, and they actually retired in their late 30s, and they didn't have the same work ethic of their dad or their grandpa. Another scripture says, what use is money in the hand of a fool if he has no desire to get wisdom? The idea is if giving someone a lot of money can actually be bad for them, especially if they haven't been managing money well, their money well, up to date. And as Jesus said, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. So however your kids manage their money currently, that's probably how they're going to manage your money after you die.
Yeah, okay, which kind of leads us to the next point. And really the reason I brought it up is not so much because a whole bunch of us have $30 million we're trying to decide what to do with. That's not the point. But that the welfare of our family after we're gone is what's important, and just handing them money may not be the only consideration.
Yeah.
Just having the asset may not be what's best. Considerations about how much and so forth. Okay, so then that brings us to the next question, which I'd like to bring up after the break, if possible, Tom, and that has to do with, you know, when you may have one or two children who are completely wayward and prodigals, essentially, poor at handling money, maybe even addicted, maybe stealing to support their addiction. You know, do we want to be giving them as much as we're giving to the other kids? And is that mm-hmm. right? Is it wrong? What does God think about it? You know, should I do it? Is it okay to you know, dole out the money differently? So let's talk about that if we can when we return. We'll be back in just a moment. Tom Copeland is our guest. He's a financial expert. Christian Financial Concepts is something that you hear regularly here on WDCX. We're talking about biblically based estate planning. And I think, if we're just going to be honest, it's got to be a little bit shocking for all of us to hear that only about one in two people, let alone Christians, doesn't matter, one in two North Americans, only 50% of North Americans have a will, have any kind of a plan for what happens to the money after we're gone. And yet, accidents happen. Stuff happens. So, practical conversation today about how to get ready for that event if, God forbid, it ever happens. And then also, how to decipher amounts and differences between how much would be doled out to one child as opposed to another if, in fact, the children are coming from a different place spiritually or in terms of their ability to handle money. Maybe one of the children is disabled and needs different consideration than a child who's fully capable and working for themselves. All of this comes into play. So we're going to talk about it. You're welcome to join the conversation. It's just one of those things that deals with real life that we want to address from time to time, and we hope you'll be a part of our conversation today. So I'm opening the phone lines. Let's hear from you. It's 1-800-684-2848, 800-684-2848, in the greater Buffalo area, 883-5000. And I think perhaps one of the best things we can do today is encourage you to start thinking about and praying about getting a will if you don't have one. 1-800-684-2848, 883-5000. Today's program brought to you by Dr. Dimitri. He's a wonderful, godly man, tremendous chiropractor in Markham. It's
so much stronger. I don't care if your knees are knocking. It's just Neil you'll be talking with. Now go to the phone and call him at 716-883-5000 or toll free 800-684-2848.
Thanks for being with us. A Thursday edition of Lifeline. My name is Neil. So glad you could tune in. Hey, we talk about real life here, and one of the things that we have to do in life is manage money. Some of us do it better than others. Some of us not so good. In any case, stewardship is a part of the equation, and Bible talks a lot about stewardship. So the emphasis today is not so much on stewardship while we're alive, but what happens after we're gone, because the laws have been written such that when we're gone, if we don't have a will directing what happens to our assets, then the government's going to decide how that works, and that makes quite a few people uncomfortable. So before we get to the question on the whole disbursement question and the ability of kids to manage money, let me get the Manuel, is it? Manuel. Okay. All right, you had a comment or something.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, what's up?
I think it's very immoral and illegal to take anybody's money. If people work hard all their lives, building their homes, building, buying cars, building businesses, it is very illegal to take their money.
Right, you're talking about the government.
And that's why the law is created and wills are written. And if people are backed up with a will, how does the government have access to taking people's money?
They don't.
That
but what you
there's no law.
That's the point.
That's the point of the conversation.
And right. Now that's the point of the conversation is if people have a will, then subject to the income taxes, of course, which we can't change. But if people have a will, then the government rules and regulations do not apply. The will applies as to who the beneficiaries are. And that's the whole reason, that's one of the reasons for having this discussion, that if people have a will, they can decide on the allocation as opposed to the government rules and regulations deciding on the allocation.
Right. And is disturbed about that as you sound, just think about the reality that apart from the will, I mean, if one out of every two, you know, there's Tom on the phone and three of us in this room right here, so there's four of us here. The statistics say that half of us would not have a will, and that ought to be troubling for most people because it means the government will be forced to decide for us,
mm-hmm.
and the reality is we can do something about it.
So we can.
That's why I'm glad to have you here. Manel, thanks for the call. Tom, we just before the break got into a question, and I want to get to it quick, then back to the phone. Steve from Scarborough coming up. But there are different considerations. Let's say that you have a child who has a disability. That's a far different consideration than kids who don't. And then also maybe there's a child who's wayward. There is a prodigal in the family. Would a parent be wrong to say, I'm not sure that I want an equal amount going to the child who's addicted and poor at handling money because they may not be able to, you know, take what they've been given and use it properly?
Yeah. And this is a question, an excellent question, because often what I find is when Christians get their will done, or anybody does, it's just everything. The husband dies, it all goes to the wife. The wife dies, it all goes to the husband. And once they're both gone, it just goes equally amongst their kids. And most parents feel that in order to be fair, they have to allocate their assets equally amongst their kids in order to demonstrate their love to them. I love the way Ron Blue puts it. He says, love them equally, but treat them uniquely. So, for example, if you have a child that's disabled and you have a certain amount of assets, and let's say you've got $400,000 in assets, and let's say you can calculate that child needs $300,000 to live on for the rest of their life, roughly, after you die, it would be reasonable to allocate the larger portion for the disabled child to meet their needs. I think 1 Timothy 5:8 would apply there, where it talks about, as Christians, we need to provide for the needs of our relatives.
Right.
And then allocate less to your other kids who presumably, I'm assuming here, have an income-earning capacity and a good job.
Right.
So that one, I find that first part, most Christians, they may not think about it, may not implement it in their will, but they'll generally come around and say, yeah, that makes sense.
What about, just quick, but what about for the person who says, I don't care how you cut it, I just can't. I need to give equal amounts. I just feel it would be fair to give equal amounts.
Okay. And there, I mean, that gets difficult, especially if there's a disabled child that has greater needs. I mean, my hope and prayer would be the other kids would consider helping that disabled child. But
right.
If they feel they need to have equal amounts, and sometimes that happens, especially, let's say, if they have three kids and one of their children squanders money, that can be difficult. What they could consider there is a trust. They could have a trust set up under the will where the money for that the child that squanders money goes into the trust, and then it's distributed. There's a trustee that decides how they can use the money for needs as opposed to wants and desires. This is consistent with the parable of the talents, Matthew 25, where if you remember the master who is God, he entrusted five talents to one servant, two to another, and one to a third servant. Mm-hmm. And then it says, after a long time, the master came back. He made them all accountable. The one with five earned five more. The one with two earned two more. They both got the same praise, rewards in heaven, I believe, because he said, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I'll entrust you with many things. Come and share your master's happiness. But the third one made no effort to invest his master's money. He was lazy. He was wicked. He even insulted God, the master, when he came back. And what did God do? He actually took that talent from the one who was the bad steward and gave it to the one who was the good steward. And so there is a case, an argument, and parents have to pray through this, but I'm just trying to throw out the idea to get them thinking about it and praying about it. You do not have to absolutely, pursuant to Scripture, allocate equally amongst your kids. You may decide that. God may direct you to do that. But especially if one of them squanders, they're wayward, they're way afar from the Lord, you may consider allocating them less or putting it into a trust.
All right, 1-800-684-2848, 883-5000 if you're calling from the greater Buffalo area. Steve, you're next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. What's going on? You've got a question.
Yeah, just a question whether there's any circumstances when it would make sense or advisable for parents to communicate the wishes of their will to their kids ahead of time.
That is a great question.
Yeah. Really good question, Steve. The answer is yes, especially if you're doing something out of the ordinary, or even if it's not that much out of the ordinary. Let me give you a few real-life examples that I've seen where, for example, a dad died, and they had wills done, and then mom died. And in the estate, mom had decided to give a certain percentage to the Lord's work. Well, she had two kids, and one of the kids was not a Christian. This son never had any idea that mom and dad were going to allocate a percentage to the Lord's work. And because the expectation, I think, there was an expectation he was just going to get half, and there would be nothing given to charities, he disputed the will. He hired a lawyer, and he disputed the will. And the unfortunate part is it dragged on for a while, and the charities ended up getting less than what mom and dad wanted them to get because the one son, in this case was a non-believer, disputed the will. And I think a lot of that would have been resolved had mom and dad just communicated to their kids, hey, understand this, we just at a conceptual level, we've prepared our wills, and we're going to be allocating a percentage, whatever it is, as the Lord directs, to God's work. It's going to go to charities, and often if the expectation is there and the kids know at a conceptual level, they don't need to know the details and the numbers and the amount of assets mom have, but if they know at a conceptual level that part of the estate is going to charities, then there's a whole lot less chance of a dispute or a lawsuit.
Okay, and is there a specific age at which you should begin communicating this?
Boy, that's a good question, Neil. I think as soon... Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, the parents are going to have to discern God's will on that, but I think as soon as mom and dad have done a will, and especially if they're in the later ages, I mean, 65 plus... But the problem is we all don't know, right? I've seen couples in their 50s die in a car crash, right?
Right.
So I think certainly you'd want them to be adults, I think, to tell them this, generally speaking. But that's a tough one. But most of the time, you know, most people are living into their 70s and 80s, and most people, certainly by then, their kids are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, and that's certainly an age where you can tell them.
Steve, I'm curious, since you raised the question, have you thought much about when you would tell your kids?
Not really, but I mean, it's not something, my kids are grown now, so it would be appropriate to sort of tell them now, but Tom had a good point there, because one of the concerns is you don't want to get into the details, but he said just as on a conceptual level, or, you know, just to give them the idea that, hey, some is going to go to charity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important, but I wasn't sure how you go about doing that without getting into all the details.
This is kind of a crazy question. I don't even know if it applies, Tom, but the facetious scenario I came up with earlier said, let's say there's somebody who has $30 million and they choose to give $27 million to a charity and $3 million to the kids because they don't want to overburden their kids with money they really haven't earned with their own labor, and they don't want to cause trouble and confusion. And that's just, for whatever reason, that's what they decide.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder, Has there, in your knowledge, ever been a situation where, upon learning as to how the money will be distributed when mom or dad are gone, that the kids would file a lawsuit before they're gone to try to get the will changed?
Yeah, I've never seen them do that. I don't think they'd have much of a case. But I have seen, cases where, like kids dispute wills or argue that money shouldn't go to certain charities. And
certainly, we've heard a lot about that after. Yeah, I'm just wondering about before. But
no, not before at all. Yeah. No. And I have seen one case where the parents are very wealthy, and they have communicated their kids, you're only getting $1 million each. The rest of it is going to God's work. And $1 million each is a whole lot more than most people in North America are going to get from their parents.
Yeah, and I don't want to belabor this, but I'm intrigued by Steve's question. Let me come back to it for one more second.
Sure.
Steve, what prompted your question? Why is this on your heart? In other words, is giving to something other than just your kids part of your plan?
Well, it's not part of my plan as yet, but it's something that I've been thinking about.
Okay.
And something that... I mean, I've seen different things happen with different, as parents pass on, and these arguments are more than, I was going to say squabbles, but they're far more than that. Downright, sometimes people get very nasty after parents are gone, and I hate to see that. So if we decide to give some to charity as opposed to splitting it up just amongst the children, how do you go about that? We don't want them to be surprised at the details of the will. We would rather them know ahead of time, but don't want to get into the details with them, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. Tom, any final thought or response?
Neil, I think of a case where it was a client where the father died and he had five kids, and basically before he died, he decided to give some money to some of his grandkids. And I won't get into the details, but the two out of the five kids felt that money given to the other three, the grandkids of the other three kids, was sort of like an advance on their inheritance. And in a sense, that's what Dad wanted it to be, but he never changed his will. Well, I can tell you that they spent more on legal bills fighting over that, and the division it created in the family was unbelievable because Dad never dealt with it. He never updated his will accordingly. And he never really communicated with his kids. And it can just really create a lot of problems once the parents have gone. And they don't have to give details. Certainly most parents probably don't want to tell their kids how much they have in assets. But even say, hey, two things. One, we're going to give a percentage to charities. And two, if they have a child that squanders money, they may actually say to them, we're going to give you less because you've been a bad money manager, and explain why and the biblical principles. By the way, I had one young man show up, actually not that young, about 40 years old, with his wife in my office a couple years ago, and his parents were very wealthy. He was the only child. He figured he had it made. He squandered money. The wife had to keep her money separate and so she could make sure the mortgage was paid, and his parents went to him and said, listen, son, you waste money. You've always wasted money. We've decided we're not going to give you anything. It's all going to God's work when you die. That created an incentive for him to come and see us and learn God's way of managing money. And I don't know where he is at today, but he was certainly headed in the right direction. It created quite an incentive for him to start to learn how to manage money properly.
Well, and presumably if his parents saw that, changed their mind. And
I think they probably would.
That would be a great thing. But even if they didn't, he'd be in a much better place. They may have saved his own financial future by causing him to wake up and begin learning how to manage money. So either way, he wins.
Absolutely.
Great decision by mom and dad on that part. All right, Steve, thanks for your phone call. We've got Tom Copeland as our guest. He's actually going to be doing a seminar in the not-too-distant future. We'll tell you more about that. 1-800-684-2848, 883-5000. You don't have to have millions of dollars. You might only have hundreds of dollars or maybe a few thousand dollars. But whatever your assets happen to be, the government will decide how they get distributed if you don't have a will. And only about 50% of people in North America have them, Christian or otherwise. So we're talking about biblical principles of estate planning with Tom Copeland. We'll continue for another 25 minutes or so. 1-800-684-2848, 883-5000. What about you? Let's hear from you. We'll be back after this from Dr. Paul Musa. He's the dental implant expert in the GTA.
Financial Moments with Tom Copeland.
Although it is biblical to save for future needs, sometimes Christians accumulate more than necessary. In the parable of the rich fool, Christ warned against hoarding. Therefore, in the process of estate planning, project your future needs and prayerfully consider giving the surplus while you are living. Why? 1. Assets given pursuant to your will require no personal sacrifice because, as Paul said, we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. 2. God will bless generous givers currently. In Luke 6:38, Jesus said, "Give and it will be given to you." And 3. God promises eternal rewards to those who give generously while on earth. 1 Timothy 6 says, "Command them to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age." In summary, project future family needs and give God the surplus while you are living.
What other program allows you to talk about all the things you deeply care about and puts you directly in touch with all the people whose opinion you'd most like to know? Yep, Lifeline.
1-800-684-2848, 883-5000 in the greater Buffalo area. Maybe some of you don't think having a will is a good idea. And if that's the case, you're welcome to express that. In fact, I'd love to hear that, because some of you may just be coming from a different perspective. Maybe you've got a different take on this than we're talking about. We're presenting the idea that one out of two don't have a will. That's a bad idea, but you may have a different take. 1-800-684-2848, 883-5000 in the greater Buffalo area. Either way, any question, any comment, you're welcome to ask. Tom Copeland's our guest here. So the transfer of wealth, there's going to be a whole bunch of it happening over the next 30 years or so as the baby boom generation ages out and disappears into the presence of God, Lord willing.
Yep.
Right? But it's a pretty big number. I think you were kicking around some numbers earlier of how much wealth will change hands in the next 30 years.
In the next 30 years, I mean, there's all kinds of projections, and nobody knows for sure, but the number is mammoth. Like, the projections I've seen and estimates is that in North America, about somewhere between $10 trillion and $15 trillion worth of wealth will transfer generations, transfer, and this is the largest intergenerational transfer of wealth in history. And it's interesting that most of the baby boomers are not prepared for this. At least they haven't done a proper will. And the other thing that is interesting, Neil, if everyone just dreams with me for a minute, let's say it's $10 trillion. That's a huge amount of money. Let's say 10% of those people are Christians. That's $1 trillion. And let's say that on average they give 10% of their money to the Lord's work. That's $100 billion. That's a mammoth amount of... We can change the world in terms of ministry with that kind of financial support. It's huge.
All right, and you don't prepare wills. You're not a lawyer. So this isn't about this conversation has nothing to do with you wanting to prepare anyone's will. Encouragement to have one as a suggestion. Now, because you're saying that it's a reflection of godly wisdom when it comes to handling money. That's your take on it. Mm-hmm. What does the Bible say about transferring wisdom? Does it talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of proverbs that tell us to get wisdom to seek wisdom, to seek God's wisdom, of course. And I love Proverbs 16:16 says, "Get wisdom; it's worth more than money. Choose insight over income every time." And I think the reason I've seen that over the last 35 years, just practically, Neil, because I find if children get a lot of money easily and they haven't had to work for it, and if they don't have godly wisdom in managing that money, then as Jesus said, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And if you're not trustworthy with very little, the implication you won't be trustworthy with much, because what will happen is those kids, when they get that large inheritance, if they're used to spending their own money freely, they'll do the same thing with the inheritance. They'll apply the same thinking. And I've seen some very large inheritance, $2 million, $3 million, $5 million, literally squandered in 5 to 10 years. And the kids actually run out of money before they die.
So Proverbs 13 talks about a good man leaving an inheritance for his children. But do you think that the emphasis there, it's just a question, is on that the man is good because he leaves an inheritance, or he's good because he has an inheritance to leave?
That's a good question. I think it's more it's good because he has a good inheritance. He's managed money well, so he's leaving assets as opposed to liabilities. There are some people alive today, when they die, they're actually going to leave more debts than assets. They're going to actually end up leaving net liabilities. And I won't go into the details, but that causes all kinds of stress and problems for their children, for their heirs, And I would say this, I don't give legal advice, but if you happen to have a parent that dies, anyone out there, and if they have more liabilities than debt, one of the first things you should do before even accepting the position of executorship, even if you've been appointed executor in the will, is you need to get some legal advice, because you could be personally liable for some of those liabilities under certain circumstances, especially in Canada, any liabilities with Canada Revenue Agency.
Well, we're going to need to take a break here. I'm looking at the clock. We've got a lot more to go here, but I want to free up some time here for anyone to ask any questions they might have on the subject. And I think that probably part of the hesitancy on the part of some to even dive into these waters is because if you're in the 50% who has not yet gotten a will, there's that sense that maybe, you know, we're going to make you feel foolish or something. Got to trust me on this. We are not. But you may have some questions to ask. And so if you feel you need to change your name, that's okay. Come up with an alias name. Just don't use the name Tom, because we don't want to get confused, all right? But, you know, George, Georgette, whatever you want, make up a name if you need to. But we do want to give you an opportunity to have your questions answered. It's why Tom Copeland does what he does. And how long have you been doing this on the side as a ministry for people, helping them learn how to manage money God's way?
Since 1982, and I don't sell any financial products, and I don't make any money at it. It's strictly... my treasures are in heaven. It's the rewards, the eternal rewards that that God's going to bless me with.
All right, and real quick before the break, what about this seminar coming up?
Yeah, there's a seminar on biblically-based estate planning at In Touch Ministries of Canada in Markham. And if you want more information on that, go to BibleFinance.org. That's our website, BibleFinance.org. And there's a seminar. I'm going to be teaching what the Bible says on finances with respect to estate planning.
All right, and
in a lot more detail and with some real-life case studies.
Just so people understand, In Touch Ministries is Dr. Charles Stanley's ministry.
Yes. Right?
And you've been working with them and preparing materials for them for a long time.
Yeah, for many years.
All right.
Many years, and I speak at their location here quite frequently. I just had a workshop there in February as well.
Okay. Well, for more information on that conference, go to BibleFinance.org, BibleFinance.org. We will take a break and be back in just a moment. Let's hear from you. It's 800-684-2848 or 883-5000. Got a few minutes left here with Tom Copeland, and if you want to be in on the conversation, please don't hesitate to join us. Change your name if you want. 800-684-2848 or 883-5000. Hey, don't you think it's time for some beautiful jewelry from our friends at Firth?
Keep the promise of God's love close to your heart and the hearts of your loved ones with an elegant cross pendant from Firth Jewelers. With Easter on its way, I can't think of a more beautiful symbol of the Christian faith than a cross. Hi, I'm Michael Firth. At Firth Jewelers, we have a vast selection of cross pendants that will express your faith beautifully. From diamond, yellow or white gold, and even sterling silver, we are sure to have a cross pendant that fits any style. Our friendly, helpful staff will assist you in selecting a gift that will fill their heart with joy. Be sure to check out our unique display of children's jewelry for Easter. Find the perfect gift to strengthen your loved one's hope and keep the promise of God's love close to their heart. From Firth Jewelers, unique collection of elegant cross pendants and faith jewelry. Head over to Firth Jewelers today, 2435 Military Road in Niagara Falls, New York. Just down the road from the fashion outlets, if it's new in jewelry, it's at Firth Jewelers.
Serving New York State and Southern Ontario, you're listening to 99.5 WDCX FM Buffalo, WDCX HD1 Buffalo, and WDCZ AM 970 Buffalo, WDCX AM 990 Rochester, and WDCX HD1 Rochester, and WDCD AM 1540 Albany. This is Lifeline with Neil Boron. To join the conversation, call 883-5000 or 1-800-684-2848.
All right, we get back to it here with Tom Copeland. He's a financial expert. He works as a certified public accountant, working largely with corporations in Canada, but has dedicated his time on the side, his ministry, to helping individual believers manage money God's way, and has become an expert in the area of what the Bible has to say about managing money, and has some very practical and godly suggestions for us about how to do that. Let me just fire a couple of real quick questions at you, and we'll continue here, but let me ask you this one, and we won't spend a lot of time on it. Let's say that, I mean, it happens, all right? Somebody is fairly wealthy, and they have a will, but but they're given six months to live. Should they begin doling out some of their finances? They're perfectly healthy right now, but if something doesn't change, if they're not automatically healed, then they're going to be gone in 6 months. Should they begin doling out some of that before they pass on, or just let the will kick into gear when they're gone?
I think if they have the mental capacity, because sometimes when people are, 6 months to live, they may be incapacitated. But if they have the mental capacity, I think they should seriously consider doing some of their giving while they're living. Because then you know for certain where the money's going, and also it just reduces any potential disputes or complexities in the distribution of the will. So,
all right, another quick question. I realize there's a lot of room for conversation here and or disagreement, but let's say, Tom, that you have three kids, and two of them are wealthy. They work in the business field of some kind, and they're doing fine. Mm-hmm. But you have a third who lives on the mission field and has dedicated their life to serving God and could use additional support. Would you give money? Would you redirect your giving based upon that scenario?
Yes, I would. And as a matter of fact, in the upcoming workshop I'm doing on March 28th, I give a real-life case study with that very scenario where the parents have one son who's in full-time mission in his work. He's underfunded. And I actually suggest to them two things. Number one, if they have a surplus of assets while they're living, they need to do a projection as to how much they need, because sometimes people accumulate more than they need. Do a projection as to how much they need, and if they have a surplus, they should do some of that giving while they're living to help support them. And even in the will, they should probably prayerfully consider allocating more to the missions organization the son works for, because he has greater needs. Certainly allocating more to those kids who have greater needs, I think, is consistent with Scripture. And there's tax advantages if you do it pursuant to your will and if it goes to the missions organization.
Okay, let me get to Ethel real quick. Ethel, you're on with Tom Copeland. What's up?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Ethel.
I do have a will. It does need to be updated.
Okay.
I also have four grandchildren that I have been investing for in mutual funds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the funds are invested in trust, under their names, but in trust. But I need to put these four into my will. What is the best way to give these funds to these children? I don't particularly want to give it to them for education purposes. I just wanted to leave it to them as a gift.
Ethel, I think you just have that written into your will. Get your will updated. Indicate in your will that those particular funds that are, quote, in trust with your grandchildren, that whatever those amounts are, that under your will, those amounts would go to your grandchildren. Now, if they're under 18 years of age, you may have to put it in trust for them where there's some where their parent, I guess, is a trustee. Somebody, are
okay.
Yes, because if the kid's under 18 years of age, there's problems with them receiving the money.
Yeah. And should I be setting a date that they should get this money, or how should I do that?
That's a good question. I mean, if you intend it for education, you may want to make it.
I don't intend it for education.
Oh, okay. So
I'm leaving it as a gift for them.
As a gift. So what do you intend it for? Maybe for them to down payment for a house?
Later on, whatever they, for a
Okay, that's a good question. And I've seen this often where what parents will do is they'll say, okay, if we die, the children can have access to a certain amount of money at age 18, often for their education.
Right.
But they don't get the rest of it until, let's say, they're 24 or 25.
Okay.
And so you could make it so that you could have it written in the will that the money stays in trust
until
they're 25 years of age or something, some age where you think would be the time when you want them to have it.
Okay, that's great.
All right. Hey, Ethel, you listen all the time. You call in quite a bit.
I do. Actually, I was just coming in. I just rushed and drove my car and rushed inside because I wanted to ask him this question.
I'm glad you did. I have a question for you, though.
For me?
Yeah, would you be my adopted grandma?
Yeah. We can arrange that.
All right.
Anything can be arranged.
Thanks, Ethel. God bless.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye.
Let's get to Steve real quick. This is the last call we'll have time for. Steve, good to have you. Are you back with us? Is this the same Steve?
Yeah, sorry to be...
no problem.
I hope I'm not taking up the airwaves, but just one thing that came up when Tom was talking. Is there any time or is there any circumstance, I guess, that where it would make sense to distribute some of the assets while the parents are still alive? Like, is there anything special about waiting until they've passed away?
Nothing special to wait till they pass away, Steve. As a matter of fact, Ron Blute uses the term, do your giving while you're living so you know and where it's going. one advantage, first of all, I think there's some big, there's big spiritual advantages. I believe when Christians give their money while they're living, they're going to have greater rewards in heaven as opposed to when they do giving through their will. I believe there'll still be rewards in heaven as they give through their will, but I think there's greater rewards when you do your giving while you're living. Why? Because when you give through your will, you're not really sacrificing anything. As Paul said, we brought nothing into this world, we shall take nothing out of it. So when you give through your will, you're not sacrificing anything. But when you give while you're living, you are. And I think also, you know, Christ talked about blessing Christians currently. He said, given it shall be given unto you. So as we give that couple, as you give while you're living, God may even provide you with more income that you wouldn't expect. And I think also God, if you look at 1 Timothy 6, God promises eternal rewards to those Christians who give generously while they're on earth. It talks about laying up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age. So I think it's one thing I'll be teaching at the seminar is how to do a projection and how to determine, especially if parents have accumulated more than they really need for retirement, and how to start consider distributing that while they're living, enjoy the eternal rewards, and also help out the ministries and even help out their kids that need it and see those benefits while they're still alive.
And did you ask specifically about the tax implications? In other words, is there a tax advantage of any kind if you disperse while alive as opposed to waiting for the will to kick in?
Well, certainly in Canada, there's a tax advantage if you disperse while you're alive, and there is also a tax advantage if you disperse pursuant to your will, both.
I'll try to find out on the U.S. side. We've got Esther Goulias of EG Tax can answer that in 2 seconds, so we'll see if we can track that down. But that's an interesting question as well. Steve, thanks for the call. Again, there's a seminar coming up that deals with this, right, biblical-based estate planning. Where is it happening and when?
It's March 28th, Saturday, March 28th. It's an all-day workshop. I'm leading the first half. Steve Weir of Link is leading the second half. It's at In Touch Ministries of Canada on Riviera Drive. And for details, check out BibleFinance.org. That's BibleFinance.org. There's a place where you can get details and you can register.
Okay, very good. BibleFinance.org. Tom, thanks for your work. Thanks for all that you do to help inform us on issues like this. And as you know, we'd love to get you back again because money, I mean, it's a big issue. We deal with it. It's part of our lives, and how we handle it matters. And the Bible has a lot to say about finances, doesn't it?
Mm.
Tons. All right. So
over 2,300 references. I'll mention one other thing, Neil, that we didn't talk about.
Yeah.
As well as getting your wills updated, people should also get a power of attorney put in place, because the will doesn't kick in till you die. If you become incapacitated and not able to manage your affairs, you need a power of attorney in favor of someone who can manage your affairs if you're incapacitated and you're not able to manage your affairs. So you need a power of attorney as well.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for the advice. God bless you, Tom. Thanks for being with us. Tom Copeland, he's a trusted friend of this ministry. And, of course, you hear his Financial Moments with Tom Copeland each day at 5:23 here on Lifeline. And he's got one that runs in the morning as well. He is not in the business of making money from any of these kind of conversations. He actually is a CPA dealing with large corporations in Canada. What he does on the side, though, is help individuals, people like you and I, to manage money God's way and to understand what the Bible has to say about finances. This is purely his ministry, nothing else. If you'd like to learn more about that seminar he's got going on biblically based estate planning, it's March 28th. In Touch Ministries in Canada is where it's going to be happening. Go to BibleFinance.org for more details.